Welcome to a new episode of The Brand Called You. Today I have someone who I hold in very high esteem, someone who's quite a legendary manager, and someone who's probably won every single CEO award there is to get in this country. My good friend Anthony Jacob. Anto, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me over, Ashutosh.
Anthony is a chartered accountant. He's worked for ITC as a colleague. He's worked for Continental Grain. He's worked for Royal Sundaram. And he's currently the CEO of Apollo Munich, the company that made Let's Uncomplicate very, very commonly used across the insurance industry. So Anto, as a chartered accountant, you're one of the few people I know who have transitioned from being in the finance function into a general management role, right up to the top in leadership levels. Talk to us a little bit about your early journey as a professional.
Right. Actually, the chartered accountancy was a default option. Mm-hmm. I recollect, in school I wasn't too good in my studies, so I had some challenges with my parents. Mm-hmm. College was completely different. I was a topper. Mm-hmm. So this was commerce. And then I went into this common admission test those days. And because I was a topper, I was overconfident. And I went to do this examination CAT mm-hmm. without preparing.
Yeah.
And then I didn't make it. Mm-hmm. So with commerce background and no MBA opportunity, and I was very particular I should go to one of the better ones, chartered accountancy became a default option. Mm-hmm. At that time, it looked like a failure, but in hindsight, today it is something which I think has brought me to where I am.
Interesting that you say that after qualifying as a chartered accountant, you thought it was a failure, and yet it has led you to such incredible heights.
No. So what happened is when I didn't get an MBA, I thought it was a failure.
Okay.
But the chartered accountancy, once I got into it, I liked it, mm-hmm. and I was pretty clear that I was not going to be a bean counter. Now, with chartered accountancy, you can be an accountant or you could be a finance manager. I chose the finance manager path.
Correct.
Keeping in mind that general management is where I want to end up.
And at what stage did you start to transition from being a finance manager into a general manager?
I was quite clear right from my school and college that that's where I wanted to be. Right. Fortunately, in school, I had the opportunity of being the school captain. In college, I became joint secretary of the commerce department. So I had something in leadership inside me, an experience. In ITC, I was fortunate to work with in corporate finance. And that led me to the boardroom discussions. I used to sit behind the directors, take down notes. And so the urge to become one of them came out quite easily and, you know, quite early on in 1988. And I said, I need to make this move from finance to general management because that's what mm-hmm. I wanted to be. But again, interestingly, it happened not by design, by accident. I moved in my career in various companies and I landed up in Auckland as the finance manager for the insurance company there. Mm-hmm. And then I got a call from my previous CEO from India and said, you know, we have an opening for a CEO job in India, Royal Insurance, Royal Sun Alliance. Would you like to take it? So I was very, very happy. Family was very, very happy in Auckland. And I had to make a choice whether New Zealand happiness or, you know, a CEO job. It didn't take me much time because that's what I wanted. I did take the family some time to accept it.
You must have been very young at that stage.
Yes, that was interesting. That was 38.
Wow.
And I remember telling my mom very early on that, you know, I will become a CEO at the age of 50. So I did it 12 years in advance. So I was quite happy about that.
Fantastic. And after the CEO role in India, then you moved again. I think you moved to Dubai after that.
Yes. So what happened was I was responsible for bringing Royal Sun Alliance into India.
And since you're talking, maybe you'd like to talk about the fact that you were the first insurance license that was given in this country?
Correct. So that was also a very interesting episode because I was in this project office, Royal Sun Alliance, working with the regulatory authorities and people to get the license. And I happened to be one amongst 100 top managers in the Royal and Sun Alliance ecosystem to attend a worldwide conference. At the end of the conference, the worldwide CEO said, each one of you need to give a commitment. Now, this is in 1998. And my name was Anthony. So, with A, I was called up first. Anthony, why don't you go first? Mm-hmm. Alphabetical order.
Amazing.
So, I didn't know what to say. So, I said, I will ensure that Royal and Sun Alliance gets the first insurance license, private sector insurance license in India. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how the hell I was going to do it and where it was going to come from. But since I made a commitment, I had to really work hard.
Yeah.
And it worked very, very closely with the then regulator and put in our application first. And we got our license first and we were up and running.
Fantastic. And then you came back to Apollo Munich.
Yep.
Okay. So I'm going to come to Apollo Munich a little later. But, you know, you're one of the few people, again, who's worked for an Indian company, who's worked with a British company, who's worked with an American company, and who's worked with a German company.
Correct.
How have these experiences been, and what is culture like in these companies?
Actually, very different. There's no right or wrong answer, and each one works for its own.
Yeah.
Let me put it very, very simply. Americans would expect results as of yesterday. The British would say results as of today. The Germans are okay if you give the results tomorrow.
Oh, wonderful.
Right? I like the German model because it's it gives you space. It allows you to think. There's a lot of homework. There's a lot of preparatory work which goes into it. And there's a lot of work which happens on the German side in anticipation of what we're going to present. There is a lot of analysis done before any board meeting. And it's not a surprise that some of the German products are the best in the world. Mm. So even on the services side, I like their approach.
And, staying with your role outside India, you have been an expatriate manager in multiple countries and you've hired many, many expatriates as well.
Yes.
Again, we will talk about your incredible people management skills at some stage. But what is it like to, work as an expat and to hire expatriate managers?
So let me talk about the first one. In terms of hiring expat managers. I remember at one stage when we got our license in Royal Sundaram, I had around 16 expats working for me. And these were personally chosen by me. Now, what I clearly understood is, firstly, you won't necessarily get the best people to come to India because India wasn't a great place to live in, even if it was for a short duration. But you needed people who understood the subject and who could adapt to the change. Which meant that it's not just themselves. You also needed to look at their partners or the spouse or the children. So when I interviewed people to come to India, I looked at them, whether they were okay.
Yeah.
I looked at their spouse. I spoke to their partners or spouse and the children also to make sure that they will fit it into this culture. So these were carefully chosen people. Of course, they were outstanding once they came in. But if you didn't get any of these right, if the spouse was not happy, person would not succeed. So I used a completely different approach in terms of selecting some of these people to work in India. Me being an expat was also a very, very interesting experience. One is, expat terms are always very good. Auckland was a great city for us. Our family loved it. And there it was quite different because I think I was one of the few expats in Auckland with the Royal Sun Alliance. And, we as a family sort of adjust to change quite easily. We make friends quite easily, both in and outside the office. So for me, quickly getting into the culture of a new land was pretty easy. I did some homework, and I think everybody does do. They should do their homework before they go to any new country. Mm-hmm. I recollect another interesting incident there. I was the finance manager, and we had a Kiwi CEO. And within a few days, I got very friendly with everybody and I invited him home for dinner. And I said, my wife is a good cook. I'd love to have you and your wife home for dinner. He was a bit surprised, but they came along and we had a great chat. And when others in the office came to him about it, the local Kiwi, they said, we don't do this. But I realized that the CEO really enjoyed it, and he called me to his house, which was again a big surprise for my colleagues. So I think it all depends on how one sort of accepts a different culture, and sort of you change, but at the same time you don't lose your own way of doing things.
That is so true. That is so true, and that's probably the reason why I always said that Indians make extremely good expatriate managers anywhere in the world.
Absolutely, I think we are very friendly. We are hospitable. We are we are adjusting. We are tolerant. And we're very careful in how we deal with things, particularly when we're abroad. We know how Indians behave in Singapore and how Indians behave in Chennai.
Yeah, that's true. So, Anto, now moving to the second part of our chat, which is Apollo Munich. I mean, I think you're a very modest individual, but as an outsider, I do believe that Apollo Munich is what it is today because of Anthony Jacob. I mean, I know your stakeholders will listen to this and a lot of, but I think I've seen you build the organization from the first brick. So, you know, as the first CEO who has built this company into a $500 million value organization, what were some of your challenges?
Yeah, actually, I wasn't the first CEO. There was an interim. There was a CEO, a German person, who was there for some time. But I came in at a point of time in 2009 when there was a bit of a crisis, which I'm sure the stakeholders also will agree. I completely disagreed with the then plan. And I said to the stakeholders that we need to redo the plan. And to redo this, we can do it internally, but I would also like an outside consultant. So we used an outside consultant too. So we completely changed the way we were going to go up in terms of our strategic plan. Earlier, it was a group focus. We said we'll only do retail focused. We will do things very, very differently. We will uncomplicate health insurance. So this meant that we needed to make sure that we had the right people in place. People understood what we were attempting to do. We said profit first amongst equals. So we are not running over top line. And then we said, let's put ourselves in the shoes of the customer. At that time, it was almost one size fits all. So we made a lot of difference in the way we went about internally first, in terms of changing people's mindset, in terms of here is a product and service which has to be quite different. We need to uncomplicate it. We then understood what our customers wanted, you know, particularly when they had a healthcare issue. We made products which actually serve the purpose. So there are lots of examples I can give you in terms of let's uncomplicate. For example, we were the first to bring in lifelong renewals. Mm-hmm. Now, earlier to us, there was a dead end. The file would close when you're 65 or 70. And we said, no, that's the time you need insurance.
Correct.
So we said lifelong. There was a time when, if you made a claim, you were penalized at renewal time. Either you didn't get a renewal notice or you were loaded with the premium. Mm-hmm. We said, no. We're in the business of paying claims. So why should we penalize the customer? So we did a lot of things very, very differently. We challenged the status quo. And that's a culture which we built internally. And every department sort of went with the flow. And I think that's worked for us to our advantage.
Well, I guess that's one reason why I moved my insurance to you. And, have stayed. Basically to say that as I get older, there is one company which will look after me.
Absolutely. And then we can go on, there were some disease-specific products which we brought in. There was somebody who called me and said, I'm a diabetic and you guys are refusing my policy, right? Refusing to even give me a policy. And I said, sir, you're right, but you have actually given me an idea. So I went back to our internal team and said, I don't want to listen to people who are saying we can't give them a policy. Can we find solutions? And I don't want it tomorrow. Let us take time. Let's do one step at a time. Mm-hmm. So we have policies today with zero waiting period for diabetics. Wow. So our approach was, be very different. Mm-hmm. Cater to the actual needs of our customers. We do a lot of research before we come up with new products.
And how important is a good management team? I mean, you've often spoken about, having great management teams. So obviously, you've had a really, really strong team with you in Apollo Munich.
Yeah. So I think having a really good team is very, very important. And I've been lucky in different situations. Mm. I've got some outstanding people, you know. And I think what helps them to become outstanding is trust your people, particularly your direct reports. Give them space to operate. Third is pack them when something goes wrong. Let them innovate. Be a mentor. These are some things which I have done, wholeheartedly. And I think they have paid dividends. I have a team now with me. I think almost all of them have been there right from the beginning.
Wow.
I haven't lost too many people. I think I lost one direct report on my leadership team. And people who are currently my direct reports have been there for a very long time. And I think they believe in this. And I think they are also imparting the same thing to their direct reports. So there is a lot of attachment of our people to the organization and to the brand. We're not the best paymasters, but still people are with us.
Because it's often said that people stay with the organization, not because of the company, but because of the boss.
Yeah.
And you seem to epitomize a good boss. But is this how you retain your people?
Yeah, I think it's the way, it's not just me. And I think all our leaders sort of buy into this. So it sort of goes across the organization. We are now about 4,500 people across the country. And I think it needs to come from the top. But at the end of the day, it will only work if it goes down the line. And we sort of ensure that this is well understood in the first place, well recognized and rewarded in terms of these behaviors and values which we have earmarked for the organization.
Outstanding. And I was reading a little bit about you before we started talking, and I read that, 11 of your direct reports over the last so many years have become CEOs.
Right.
Would you like to take credit for that?
I would take some credit. I love that piece. There is no better satisfaction than that. When you are able to groom people mm-hmm. to take up leadership positions. And I'm so happy for people. I have people who have worked with me for the last 15, 20 years who are currently CEOs in Australia, Middle East, Africa, Sri Lanka, and in India. And, I think I did something to get them to where they are. But that's a sense of satisfaction. And, it's not just the CEOs. I had one time a receptionist in the office, who was very good actually, and then she is today in America working in a pretty senior job in American Express.
Amazing.
A terrific feeling of satisfaction that you're able to give the foundation which can lead people to bigger jobs.
Correct.
I have another person, and this is a very interesting story for the audience here, is when we had the project office in Claridge's Hotel, Royal Sun Alliance, I had a security guard at night, day and night. This guard one day came to me and said, "Sir, I'm anyway hanging around in this corridor in Claridge's Hotel. There's a computer in the reception. Can I use that computer to learn?" So I said, "This is an interesting one and a rare one." After I checked with the others, he said, "Okay, you can do this, this, this on the computer. You can, if you wish to learn, you'd learn." Amazing story. This guy is one of the best back office operators in Apollo Munich today.
Wow.
When I left Royal and joined Apollo, he sent me an email saying, "I want to come." And today he keeps getting awards, quarterly awards at regular intervals. Mm. So a security guard becoming the best back office operator is something which gives me a lot of satisfaction.
So I'm moving now to the insurance space. Health insurance, it's something that every individual around the world needs. And yet in India, it is, despite so much intervention by people like you, it is still a very small percentage. What is happening in the space?
Yeah, it is. There are two sides to it. One is, I feel very happy that we are now a 40,000 crore industry, health insurance. Mm-hmm. And when I started off, it was about 600 crores.
Yeah.
Okay. But the other way of looking at it is, how many people have got insurance in this country? Less than 100 million have retail health insurance, which is sad. But you know, how can we take this forward? I think there's lots for us to do as an industry and as individual companies. We are growing at 40%. So that's, you can't do 100% every year, but we believe 30 to 40% is something which we can live with. But I think there's so much to do. But the fact is that I think the people also need to recognize that there is a financing tool which works called health insurance. Our biggest challenge in the first few years was telling people there is health insurance. For them, health insurance meant life insurance. So we had a lot of issues in the past, but now I think you're going to see an incremental pace, which the 100 million, I won't be surprised if in the next few years becomes 200, 300, 400. And then you have, below the poverty line, you have the Ayushman Bharat, which the government has brought out. That could cover 500 million. So I think I will not be surprised in the next 5 to 10 years, we are a billion people who are covered by health insurance.
And that could be a game changer. But again, I had read somewhere that you were involved with the Ayushman Bharat scheme. And
yes. Personally, I'm very, very passionate about that subject, about that segment of the population. I think they really need help. So when Ayushman Bharat came out and the first tender, the very first tender was Nagaland. And I told my team, we need to win that. Okay. And then there was a whole debate of what the pricing should be, whether it should be 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. Yeah. There was a lot of debate, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We quoted 444 rupees per family.
Wow.
I was highly criticized for quoting such a low rate by my competitors, saying that we're going to lose money, like, and you know, I'm going to be in trouble. Incidentally, I've just come out of the Ayushman Bharat office just before this meeting, and we actually have to refund money even on that, right? Now, we had a first mover advantage. We understand that landscape. So we bid a price which our actuaries believed that was the right price. So Nagaland, I think one needs to understand, whilst there is a million people, there is not many healthcare facilities.
Right.
So if you don't have healthcare facilities, where are the people going to use these schemes? This scheme, the framework is excellent. What we need to ensure is, and that's what I was saying in the NHA today, is we need to ensure how to build capacity, healthcare capacity in smaller towns and villages. And unless you build that, Ayushman Bharat won't work, because you'll have an insurance scheme, but people won't be able to use facilities if they're not there.
Correct.
So I'm a big fan of the scheme, but I think we need to work together to create healthcare facilities for people to use.
Correct, I agree. And I think that will be a game changer in this country.
You know, it will be a game changer. I have written articles suggesting that that could actually help employ a lot of people. That's one industry which could actually give employment to millions of people.
So before I move into the next segment, I need to ask you one question. And that is, you know, you won the best CEO award and every possible award in India. What is the reason for this amazing success?
Well, see, one of the things which we said internally and I said to my people is, we must judge ourselves. So a lot of us, tend to judge ourselves within, do surveys within the company. I said, no, not us. We need to benchmark with the best, and we need to participate in various, we nominate ourselves for various things. So we want to be the best in class, not just in insurance, not just in across. If it's the services, let's benchmark ourselves with the best of the best. So that's a sort of a culture which we have built. Like, we are not looking at the insurance industry, because the insurance industry may not be the best in class in terms of some of these. So we look at it each department wise, and we said to each department that whatever you do, you must be the best of best, or at least strive to be the best of best. And you can't be it overnight. It's a journey. So I'm really, very really happy that industry experts have often picked our name. In terms of being best in customer service or best in claims or best in technology. But the two big ones for me personally is, 9 times in a row, we are a great place to work.
Amazing.
9 times in a row. And this is an international institute doing an external survey on our people, right? And the second one is an Asian award. Whole of Asia, we got the General Insurance Company of the Year. Although we are a standalone health insurance, we were classified as a best General Insurance Company of the Year. Now, how did this happen? I think it's all to do with people and the way they go about doing things. I happen to be the captain of the ship. I happen to be leading the team. So I get the CEO award. But when I get a CEO award, to me, it is, I just go to collect it on behalf of 4,500.
That's very well said. Very well said. So my last question before I move into some personal questions, you know, you work with a large distribution base. What kind of insurance is best suited for this large base of people? You know, general, life, health, or should they have a basket?
Yeah. So that's a very interesting question in terms of agents and what is most remunerative for them, right? So without doing much working, people would say life insurance is very remunerative because you get, first year you get some 40-50% commission or something like that, right? Motor insurance because it's a compulsory product. But I have demonstrated through Excel sheets that for a distributor, for an agent, the best product for them to focus on is health insurance. Mm. Because this is the only product.
Yeah.
And I can challenge any of the audience to tell me if there is any other product which needs to be purchased, in my opinion, from the day you're born right up to the last day. Mm. We say cradle to grave, right? Right? There is no other product which has such a lifelong thing. And imagine an agent who is servicing a child when born, and the entire journey, you get 15% plus rewards continuously for the entire life. The person gets married, children, then become grandparents. And if you do a great service, your client base is going to increase. Secondly, premiums increase with age. Premiums increase with inflation. So 15% on that throughout is something which beats life insurance, motor insurance, everything. Agents now are convinced that health insurance is something, if they get in and they do a good job, it is like annuity for generations for them.
Wow, fabulous. So Andrew, just moving on now, you know, you have led a really, really hectic work career. How do you manage your work-life balance?
I must say that's one thing which I haven't done too well. And if my wife Uma was to give a report card on it, it would be a pretty low score on that. It's because I've been very, very passionate about what I do. And that sort of comes and it's seen by my people. And it's sort of contagious. So, I mean, looking back, I could have done much better. In terms of making sure this balance was right. But I still have time, so I will change. But, you know, when you're passionate about things, you can't not focus on it.
Correct.
You know, sometimes the family is a bit annoyed when I'm actually answering customer calls on weekends. But I care for the customer, and the customer's in trouble.
Correct.
Yeah. So I look at it from their angle, but I'm sure the family looks at it from a different angle. So that's something which I believe is a must. If there's something which I can redo, this is something which I will.
Okay. Yeah, well, those are very wise words. Next question I have for you is, when was the last time you did something for the first time?
That's a very personal thing, but I will share it, but I'm not going to go into the details. I cried.
Okay.
I cried not very long ago.
Okay.
And then I realized that I hadn't cried for almost 30 years. And that was the first time I was crying in 30 years. And that was for something, you know, which happened, which I wasn't very happy about. I cried. And nobody saw me crying, but I cried.
Thank you. So that was nice of you to share something so intimate. A couple of more questions, Anto. What would be your biggest learning from your biggest failure?
I don't like the word failure. So I would call it as, you know, we are all human beings. We all have our strengths and weaknesses. We all make mistakes. Mistakes is what I would use instead of failures, because a mistake made once and then you learn and then it becomes an asset. I have several examples of that. I wouldn't call them failures, but it may seem a failure. For example, I mentioned about I didn't get into an MBA, I didn't prepare for my CAT exam, and I failed. Now, at that point of time, it was a failure. But for me, that was a mistake. Looking back, I didn't prepare. So I failed. But I went into chartered accountancy and I did extremely well. And now I'm here speaking to you. So I think people would make mistakes. And I think we're all human beings. If you look at my personal investing side, I made some bad mistakes in investing into apartments in Chennai. Mm-hmm. It looked great at that point of time, but today it's like a white elephant, right? So what was my learning there is don't buy apartments if you don't want to live in it.
Correct.
Right? So there are different things in different times where it looks like failure, it looks completely wrong, but then you try and understand what went into it, why you took that decision, and learn from it and use it as a future. Now I know I'm not going to make that mistake again. When I do something, I will do something. If I want to buy some real estate, I will buy what I want to live in. So I don't think there are, I mean, I don't like the word failure, but mistakes. But as long as you learn from them,
correct,
they are assets.
Wonderful. So Anto, my last question to you. Take you back, young Anthony Jacob, qualified as a chartered accountant, joining ITC, and then has risen to the levels you are at today. Lots of young people must be looking at you and hearing us on this podcast. What would your advice be to a young guy who's looking starry-eyed to the next 35, 40 years of career ahead?
Yeah, my advice would be today we are in a situation where continuous self-learning is very important. Gone are the days when I was in ITC, when you depended on HR department to hold courses and training. No, that won't work. And if you depend on that, you will fail, right? Continuous self-learning. And today we have it on our phone. That's extremely important. If those who don't take that seriously will fall behind. Secondly is be passionate about what you're doing. With passion comes that extra effort and you get that extra result. Third is, in this world, you must know how to manage change. Because that's the only constant. And things are changing every second. Technology is changing the way we live, the way we work. Change management is extremely important. Lastly, if you're ambitious, you need to be mobile. You can't be in the same city where you were brought up and say that's what you want to go, because you wouldn't go too far. Some might, but generally you won't. My advice is be flexible, be mobile. And lastly, I want to add one last one is, to do all of this, you need complete family support.
Okay.
Your spouse and your children need to back you. So make sure that they understand where your passion is, make sure that they are on the same page as you are, and then I think you will succeed.
So I'm going to ask you one more question, and that is that, in your life, have you had a mentor? And if yes, do you think people should have a mentor?
I have personally not had mentors, but I have a lot of friends who act as mentors. I've sometimes come to you also and asked you for some advice. So I use friends as mentors. But I want to give you a different answer to this question. As I mentioned early on, I wasn't too bright in school. At least I didn't get the grades my father expected, right? So I had tutors. And I had that in college also. Although in college I was a topper, I did have tutors. I have tutors even today. Guess who they are? Mm-hmm. My son and my daughter and my wife are my tutors.
Fantastic.
So my children actually teach me a lot of things which I would not have otherwise learned, particularly with social media and technology. And my son, both my daughter and son are better than the best executive assistants. They sort of pump me with reading material every often so that I'm up to date with what's happening in and around the industry which I'm in. And how I could use it in the office. So they are unpaid executive assistants. My wife is a guide and mentor, and she's from behind the scenes. She supports every action at office,
fantastic,
including handling the catering at board meetings. So she's a great supporter. So I didn't have formal mentors, but I had the family backing. And my tutors, as I said, are my children, and my wife is a big supporter.
Fantastic. So, Anto, thank you very much. You've been really honest, you've been very transparent, and you've said a lot of things that I'm sure are very intimate. I'm sure the thousands and thousands of people who will watch our podcast will love every word that you have spoken. Thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.